Welcome to the Side Action Podcast, the sports gambling show that covers everything in the world of sports betting from A through Z. We'll cover the four major sports, as well as anything and everything in between worth some action, and we'll increase the size of your bankroll. And here we go.
Welcome to the Side Action, episode 42. This is Jim Weglars, a.k.a. Wegs. You can follow me at Wegspool on Twitter and Instagram.
And this is Steve Roberts, a.k.a. Action. You can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
Follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. So, big weekend. We went out to Vegas and entered the Circa Million contest. And as you know, Action, this was my first real trip to Vegas on the Strip, and we did it up.
Yeah, prototypical Vegas weekend for me. I know it was your first time, so I was trying to give you a little bit of a tour as well as make sure that we handled our podcast business and get entered into the contest. We ran into a little bit of a speed bump on Friday night because we were out fairly late, and our plan was to get up early and get to the contest at the D early in the morning so we could avoid any long lines. But unfortunately, we had a little bit of a late night on Friday, fortunately or unfortunately.
Well, it was a big night because Action is the king of the craps table. He basically took us down a road of 90 minutes on the table where he threw for 90 minutes straight and made money for Artemis Prime, yourself, and me. And it kind of paid the whole weekend for us, didn't it?
Yeah, I'll say it was probably the most epic craps dice run that I've ever been on in my life. Rolled for about 90 minutes, and we had the typical craps table. When it gets to a heater, the crowd was around us, and the dealers were getting into it, and even the pit boss was trying to throw me off by sending the cocktail waitress by and changing out the crew at one point, and even bringing in, like, what was that one time? He brought in, like, $100 worth of chips just to slow the game down.
Well, just moved them, reordered them. I think he switched the chips from one side of the table to the other or something. It was stupid.
None of it worked, though, and you and I and Art ended up taking down the former Monte Carlo casino, and now they call themselves Park MGM, so I think they were a little bit disappointed we were there. And even the dealers had a big night. I think, all in all, they probably toked about $2,000 from us and all the tips that we were giving, so it was awesome.
Yeah. It was incredible. You know, like I said, the first Vegas weekend, the first night, like this epic bringing down the house situation. And so, yeah, it was like, whatever, 4:30-ish in the morning when we got in. And, man, I was beat. You know, obviously that's a couple hours difference from Chicago. Flew in, visited with my sister before that. And then we got up fairly early to hit the book at the Rio to get some bets in for college. And then we did end up meeting my brother-in-law. You know, he picked us up. We went to the D. And there wasn't a line. So we kind of made out. We got there around 9:30 or whatever it was, 9:15, and entered the contest very easily. Some of you on Twitter may have saw the great hat we got, the Circa Million hat. But if we win the contest, apparently Action's going to be fitted for a blazer.
Yeah, 42 regular. And hopefully we get our hands on that blazer. You can have the hat. I'll take the blazer. We had a good time at the D, though. Was hoping to see Mike Palm at the Lion Bar, but he wasn't there, unfortunately, but we did have a drink or two. And then after that, we headed down to the South Point to see what it's like to be a real local.
It was so exciting, as you guys were teasing me. My brother-in-law, Dave, and Action were teasing me because I saw Jimmy Vaccaro, and I was like, oh my God, that's Jimmy Vaccaro. I was like, it's like seeing the Beatles or something. And I didn't even go up to talk to him, but he like walked right past us to organize the parlay cards, and we saw.
I was afraid that you were going to run up to him and give him a big bear hug.
I wanted to. And I saw the VSiN studio, which is actually in the South Point, like enclosed in kind of like a plexiglass. Saw Mal Shah over there. And then we saw Todd. What's his last
Wishnev.
Name? Wishnev. He's sitting in his characteristic second row seat. And we checked out some college games there. You know, it's a great book. I mean, there's TVs everywhere and pretty nice layout. It was a good time. And then after that, where do we go after that? Did we finally take a nap? I don't know what happened.
We went back to the Strip and we hung out at my go-to spot for sports and at Paris Casino and checked out a couple of games there. But I think you and I were both dragging at that point and we headed back for a quick afternoon nap.
That's right. And then we went back at it in the evening and checked. Actually, that was the steak dinner night. That's right. How could I forget?
Yeah.
You know, Strip Prime, you know, Prime Steakhouse or whatever in the Planet Hollywood. Action paid up on the steak bet from last year and had this gigantic bone-in ribeye kind of thing. It was excellent, and We had a great time, and food was good, and yeah, it was just a great evening.
Absolutely. And then Sunday, we were back at it early to rise, 7:30 yep. again, to make sure that we got in line to get in our early NFL bets. And we did that at the Rio, and after that, headed over towards Caesars, checked it out a little bit, and posted up at the Link, which has become another one of my new favorite spots there at the book. And we got a nice little spot by the bar, and we're there all day. It was great.
The Link was a really cool book. You had said it opened in August of last year,
mm-hmm.
and it's a little more modern. It has kind of these columns with square columns with TVs on every side, and they have these lounge seating around it. It take a lot of reservations for the seats, but we were able to squeeze in on the bar. We had pretty waitress Jen come by and say hi a couple times. But effectively, we just posted up there and watched all those games, and those early games had some pretty exciting action in there. You know, we'll talk about it later, but there was a very raucous, or I would say faithful, couple of Miami Dolphin fans.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. They were cheering for like punts and stuff. They had to cheer for something. They were terrible.
Yeah, remarkably how poorly the Dolphins played. Those two guys were really the top fans in the whole place. It was also littered with tons of Philadelphia Eagles fans, and early on they were not having a good time, but that quickly turned around in the second half.
It did. We obviously bopped around a little bit, you know, checked out Bellagio and all that kind of stuff, fancy stuff, the fountains and all that.
On Sunday, we also ran into another sports gambling media type, Patrick Everson from Covers. Saw him walking around with his backpack. I know he likes to give out lots of swag, so I went up and introduced myself, and he gave me a nice hat and a stress ball for the sweats so that you don't have to get too tense. And then he came back and chilled with us. We probably talked for 30 or 40 minutes with him. A very nice guy.
It was awesome. He was talking about their new app, the Covers Live app, which is basically where you can aggregate all your betting in one place. It'll track all your bets from a variety of different sources. And he actually agreed to come on the pod. So we're definitely going to take advantage of that and try to get him on the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, Patrick is one of the top reporters in the business, and he's out every Saturday and Sunday just kind of gauging the sports books. And even while we were standing there, he was texting with a few of the sports book operators around town to find out where the bets were at, where the heavy money is. And I think he'll be a great interview and a fantastic addition to the podcast.
He was texting my bear hug friend, Jimmy Vaccaro, while we were there as well.
That's awesome.
So anyway, we finished out the weekend, just had a great time. I did go straight to work on yesterday and Monday. Ill-advised move, everybody. The red eye is more than a red eye. I ended up getting this kind of sinus infection thing I'm fighting through today. Kind of crazy, but it was the best way to cap off the Vegas weekend, and phenomenal time. Definitely want to do it again. We talked about going out maybe a divisional round or something like that during the football season. So hopefully y'all can hit those places we checked out, and then, you know, let us know if you had any success with bets we put out there. So
it was an extremely successful trip for your first one. And as I said before we left, I think you'll live and learn. And next time, hopefully you'll plan to take off Monday or at least half a day or something.
Yeah, give myself a little sleep in time. So, all right, well, let's jump into this episode. We will go over college football, both the recap and look ahead for week three. That was an exciting weekend. College too. Check out the spots that we like for sure. And then we'll talk about the NFL, recap week one. There was a lot of action, a lot of injuries, unfortunately. Go over some early net yards per play data that Action has put together. And then look at our week two spots that we like. And then finally, we'll end with our Circa contest tete-a-tete segment, where we'll talk about the contest, what games we're eyeing. I have some data and information about both us and the contest in general. And then we'll basically dig into some of the action or angles we're looking at in the contest. So, sound pretty good?
Yep, let's get to it.
All right, well, let's start off with college. I mean, there was a lot of action. You know, that was really fun at the book. We were watching big game. We were watching early was that Army game. I should say the Michigan game, but Army really almost took it to them. And I tell you, Michigan should have lost the game straight up. Army had their opportunities, were leading quite a bit. We were talking about what live money line action would have been, but it was plus 1,000 to start, and then they missed that 50-yard field goal at the end of regulation, went into overtime, and Michigan was able to survive in the second overtime, getting a field goal. And so they made it through, but obviously didn't cover the 22 to 23 points.
Here in Michigan, that's all the buzz around the job site. All my colleagues and everyone I talk to, all they can say is how poorly Michigan's played through 2 weeks now. They have not looked like the team that they were supposed to be. And the other line in that one was the total, which I had the under 47, which turned out to be a pretty serious sweat when it went to overtime, 14 apiece. Yep. But as we talked about there at the book, in the second overtime, we needed a Michigan field goal and then a turnover, and it came to fruition, and I ended up winning that one, luckily.
That's right. Exactly what you needed. In fact, Action said it after they cleared the first overtime. We're like, oh my gosh, they're going to go over for sure. And then he's like, well, all I need is a field goal and a turnover. And then that's exactly what happened. Like on the first play, Army turned the ball over. The game was over. It was like crazy. So well done, Action.
Thank you.
You also had Missouri versus West Virginia. You were all over this game, obviously. And you did this as a halftime bet, right?
It was full game, minus 14. And that one was a slam dunk. They were up 31-0 at the half. And that was pretty much all she wrote.
Yeah, West Virginia's terrible.
Yep.
So note that in your future bets. One of the big games that we watched that didn't really turn out as good as we thought it would be was Texas A&M against Clemson. We both think Clemson is going to be there at least close to the national title or in the game. This team is unbelievable, and A&M isn't a slouch, but they went in and after scoring the first 3 points just got housed. It was like 24-3. They really couldn't get anything going. Kelly Mond, who passed for 400 yards last year, he was like at 99 through like three quarters or something. So that Clemson defense that lost all that talent still looks great. And but luckily for me, when I got the 17.5 on A&M in my bet, Jimbo Fisher, he must have had a ticket on it too, because he pushed it to the end and they converted on a 4th and goal from like the 1-yard line to get the touchdown to get it within 14 and cover my number, final score 24-10.
Yeah, that was the story of this one, really. It's been all over the gambling media this week about how Jimbo was on the sideline coaching like it was a national championship just for the cover.
No doubt.
I think they even called a timeout on that last play
with
7 seconds left to make sure they got it into the end zone. So that was fascinating to watch.
Pretty excited about that. You know, I did have a decent college day with that, but crazy. The other game that I was really on was the North Carolina Tar Heels hosting Miami. They were getting 6 points at home, really thought that that was a mistake. And more importantly, this Heels team is playing really well. And they did. They jumped out 17-0 on the Canes. But the Canes came back and eventually took the lead. Made me sweat a little bit. But they put up a late score to ensure that I won. And they actually won the game outright 28-25. And I'm still loving this Mack Brown angle.
Yeah, I know you're looking at him again this week, and all I can say about them is how excellent the freshman quarterback has played. Howell, I believe, is his name. Mm-hmm. And he is certainly something to watch and makes this team have a little bit different dynamic on offense. So be an interesting team to watch going forward. I imagine they'll be in quite a few more underdog roles this year.
That's right. Keep it coming. I'll cash tickets that way. One that we differed on the podcast, and obviously I don't know if you ended up betting this, but the LSU at Texas, this was kind of the marquee game of the weekend. Originally it was like 4.5 for Texas and 52.5 was the total, but I think it floated up to 6.5. We even saw 7 at one time, but I could not get 7 on Saturday. I waited and waited and waited, could not get the 7, got the 6.5. And Texas had their chances in the first half. They just kept getting, they couldn't get into the end zone. They had the one trip where they got stuffed and they intercepted it, got down there. They had a touchdown that was reversed, and then they still couldn't get in the first quarter, or the first, I guess, was the second quarter. So LSU was game on both sides of the ball and eventually kind of jumped out to a big lead. Texas closed it to 45-38 in the end, but I lost my bet. And you were right on that one, Action.
Yeah, the total was the sharp money of the week, too. That one just flew over after a pretty quiet first half, 27 in the first half. You and I talked about second half over, and I jumped on that as well, and that went way over. Unfortunately, we missed most of the game. Well, I did, napping, and then while we were at dinner. But I understand that the LSU offense was awesome, and looking back at the box score, it seemed like Joe Burrow was another world. 31 for 39, 471 passing yards, and 4 touchdowns. And I think that it's pretty clear through 2 weeks that Joe Brady, as the offensive specialist, has made a vast difference with this team. They're humming on all cylinders, and I like them going forward. I jumped on Joe Burrow to win the Heisman Trophy this morning at 18-1.
Quite a long way from when you used to dog Joe Burrow every game last year. So
right.
You're a Burrow backer now instead of a hater.
Yeah, I mean, if they can come through, beat Alabama, and make a little run at the national title, I think that's totally in question.
Well, great value there, so 18-1, so good work. And LSU, obviously, we don't enter conference play, and they're up there. It's a great win for them. It's tough for Texas. That'll hurt my win total on Texas because they needed that one, but we'll see how it turns out. Another game that we were targeting was Oregon State at Hawaii with the over at 78.5, and it looked like you were going to get there. Mm-hmm. It was 49 points at halftime. What happened?
Another one that we didn't watch. We were out and about Saturday night, so
yep.
Don't really know, other than the box score tells me that there was only 10 points scored in the second half.
Yeah, three in the fourth quarter.
Don't think I have a good answer for that one. I'll have to dig into it a little bit more.
Right. The last one is the Syracuse against Maryland. Maryland opened up as a 2.5-point dog in that game originally, got all the way up to 1.5-point favorite, and they just destroyed the Orange, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, just absolute destruction. They were up by 30 points at halftime as well,
yep.
And they went on to win the game 63-20. And the biggest takeaway here for me is just how bad Syracuse is this year.
Right.
They're clearly a downgrade at the quarterback position. And Maryland is coming up, although I think they're a little bit overinflated this week after the big win. And similarly for Syracuse, they're going to be underinflated. However, they do have that big game against Clemson.
Right.
Looking ahead this week, there's another big mover I noticed where TCU is playing at Purdue. And Purdue opened at -2.5. And as of this afternoon, it looks like TCU is now -2.5, a big 5-point move. And it sounds like the Purdue's quarterback, Elijah Sindelar, is questionable with a concussion. So that may be the reason for it.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, sometimes that injury, but in the past we've talked about this, sometimes that injury news is overinflated, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at that game already, and if it somehow gets to 3, I could see some value on the Boilers there.
There you go. Boiler up. All right, let's look at our spots for week 3. You've already put on here Arizona State at Michigan State. It was originally at 42.5. I've saw it up to 44. Why do you think this is a solid play for the under?
This just comes down to the two defenses. If you recall last year, they played in the desert, although I know it was a very different climate down there in Tempe. But these two teams combined for very few points last year, and I think it's going to happen again this year. Michigan State is one of the top 10 defenses in the country, and Arizona State has been playing well in the young season as well. And I think if you can get it under that key number, 42, then you've got some serious value.
I agree. It looks like combined these teams have given up, 38 points combined in 2 games. So that's awesome. There'll be some defense being played. The next spot you like is Iowa. They are going to Iowa State, the in-state rival. And Iowa's actually favored in this game by 2.5 points at -110 each side. So why do you love Iowa so much?
This team has been playing really well through 2 weeks.
Yep.
Granted, one of their opponents was Rutgers. However, their defense looks extremely solid. They've only allowed an opponent's yards per play of 3.6 on average this season. And last week, Rutgers got a total of 116 yards and losing the game 30-0. And now Iowa's going on the road to play against a Iowa State team who is obviously their rival. And Iowa State has been pretty underwhelming through the first 2 weeks. So I think that Kirk Ferentz and the Hawkeyes are going to be able to get it done on the road this weekend.
Iowa State almost lost to Northern Iowa in week 1, I think it was.
Yeah, won in overtime.
They're not playing the same level they are last year, and they're supposed to be a good defensive team too, but, you know, Iowa, Ferentz is a great coach, so I like that spot too. The next one is fading one of my squads. Hey, man, Northern Illinois is at Nebraska. The Huskers, and I'm going to read this as he wrote it in here, the Nebraska hype train has led to a few inflated lines. What?
Uh-huh.
Yes, of course. They lost at Colorado. They blew a big lead at Colorado last week. They're laying 14 points at home to Northern Illinois. So you're saying jump all over Northern Illinois because Nebraska can't cover a spread.
Yeah, exactly. And Northern Illinois has played well this young season.
Sure.
The MAC as a whole has been terrible. However, Northern Illinois went on the road last week at Utah and played them pretty tough, ended up only losing the game by 18, but it was a much closer game than that.
Right.
And perennially, this Northern Illinois team has played very well, and I think going on the road at Nebraska, this game being at 2 touchdowns, is some value on the underdog here.
Okay. It'll be a stay away from me, but you're right. If Nebraska hasn't covered the spread 2 weeks in a row, and we'll see if we'll go for three here. One game I like is Washington State at Houston. This is kind of a Friday night special, as action like to say. It loves the Friday night action.
Mm-hmm.
And the latest line I saw was Houston at home getting 9 points against their fellow Cougars of Washington State. I believe in Dana Holgorsen. He's been able to kind of convert that offense again. I mean, they were high flying before, but they've been playing pretty well in the first 2 weeks. And there's not going to be much defense on either side. The total right now is at 75.5, which I guess the talk in the industry is whether that's too high. But, I mean, these teams can score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good pick. The Cougars are, although it is a neutral site game, it is going to be played at NRG Stadium, which is in Houston. So,
right.
Presumably going to be a larger contingent of Cougar fans there Friday night.
Right.
And, of course, you have the quarterback, Derek King, who's been electric. But this offense has only posted 5.7 yards per play this season, which is a little bit subpar from where you expect them to be. And I think this number is probably about right. S&P Plus Ratings has this game as an 11-point spread. Okay. So, I mean, there may be some value there. And like you said, they're going to be in Houston. So I don't hate the pick.
Gotcha. Another one I like is Florida State at Virginia. Virginia's laying 7.5 at home. It's mainly a fade of Florida State. I think that team stinks. And they should have lost to Louisiana Monroe at home. They obviously weren't good in week one. So, you know, and I think the Cavs are a good team. The Cavaliers are a good team. So 7.5 doesn't seem like a big enough number for this game, and I'll be all over UVA in this one.
Definitely like this one, too. We talked about in the past how much I am on this Virginia team and the quarterback, Bryce Perkins. So I like Virginia. They're only giving up 3.5 opponent yards per play, so this defense is one of the best in the country, and I expect that they'll be able to hold down Florida State on that side of the ball. And then on the other side, Florida State has been underwhelming on defense as well. They failed to cover in two straight games, and I think that you're on it. They'll make it three here, although that hook does scare me a little.
Yeah, I know. Key number.
S&P Plus has it at 9, though, so you're on the right side of that one.
Getting value there. Another one that I'm intrigued by, we talked about a little bit, USC, who early in the season, I told you, they have all this talent coming in, and they're playing for Helton right now. They're 4.5-point favorites on the road at BYU, and you know, I really like this team. You've noted that USC freshman Kenan Slovis, he had a great game against Stanford.
Yeah, he was awesome last weekend. He went out and posted 377 yards on 28 out of 33 passing with 3 touchdowns. So although they lost JT Daniels, I think a lot of bettors across the nation probably saw them taking a step back. It really hasn't happened so far.
Yeah, so and BYU didn't play that great against Utah in week one, so they weren't that great last week either. So I think that's also a fate of BYU in this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is in Provo, so a tough road spot for USC, but I do think that the number is a little short.
Another one I like is the Heels. We talked about them. You think I should go with the Heels again? They're playing at Wake Forest. This is their first road test with New Mac Brown there. But I still think that for me, getting 3 points on the road against a team that's okay is a good spot for the Heels.
Yep. I'm right there with you. I've already locked this one in myself. Sure. And like I said, the freshman quarterback Howell has been amazing this year. And that pass offense has been electric. And they're going up against a Wake Forest defense, which allows 66% of their opponent's passes to be completed. And they're ranked 88th in S&P Plus on defense. So I love the Heels here. I saw a couple 3.5s earlier in the week, which I wish I had my hands on. But I think getting the 3 is some value, and I think that they can pull out another underdog win outright.
That's right. Let's do this.
Yeah, look at the money line, Wicks.
That's right. I will. All right, the last spot you like is the first half over of 31 in the Clemson-Syracuse game. Mm-hmm. And you have 31 points at Pinnacle. What does that mean?
I was looking at the books before we jumped on to see if there had been a first half line posted yet, and that's the only one that was up. It's one of the sharper European books. So presumably that we can find a 31 in the books that I have access to, I'll be jumping on that one as well. Syracuse gave up 42 to Maryland by themselves in the first half last week.
So you're saying the 31 total for the half is what you're looking at?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. because I thought you said line for a second there. And I know that I think the line is still pretty heavy. It's 27 or something like that for the game.
So. Yeah, the game line is 27. I mean, I did see it looks like that first half spread is 14.5. That scares me off just a little bit because I do expect Syracuse to come out and show some fire. Remember, they almost beat this team down in Clemson last year. So
Lawrence got knocked out of that game, didn't he?
Exactly. Yep. And the backup had to come in and save the day. So, and the national championship.
That's right. What was the response in college? All right. Well, let's jump into our NFL segment now, the week one recap. I just kind of noted generally that in week one, if you look back since 2015, underdogs have been killing it at week one. And they're now 47-32-1 against the spread over that period of time. That's only 6.4 covers, you know, on average, compared to a normal average of 7.3 covers in, you know, if you look at the entire season. So obviously, maybe I missed the boat on both my pick and pool and betting. I should just bet the underdogs the whole time. You're going to win some money.
Yeah, I wish we had this information on Sunday morning. We could have made a little more cash on Sunday, but that's okay. I do have one question, though. 6.4 covers, is that by week?
No, it's, yeah, by week. Exactly. Okay. So 6.4 teams out of the 16, like 16 winners, right?
Uh-huh.
6.4 of them were covers, were actually covering the spread versus the average. When you look at least my data has over a full 17 game season, 7.3 is the average of how many covers you get over that same spread.
By favorites, right?
Exactly. Favorites. Okay. Exactly.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. Versus the underdogs, like this week it was 10. I think it was 5, 10, and 1. With the tie at Colts, or not tie, but tie against the spread, you know.
Okay.
But week two, you know, you asked, is there a bounce back spot? Well, in week two, underdogs from 2015 have only gone 36-28 over that span, averaging 7 covers, you know, for the favorites. So just a little bit under the average. So there's a little bit of a correction, but the underdogs still have been taking the money for the most part over the last few seasons. Mm-hmm. Don't know if you could bank on it quite as much as you can in week one.
But generally speaking, we could shade towards the underdogs, maybe start with them and
that's right.
In terms of our contest picks and then take a look and see if there might be some value on favorites also.
Conceptually, I think that this is true because like us in Vegas or whoever was making the lines, it's hard to figure out week one. You don't even know what's going on with some of these teams, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's not as much data, whereas later in the year, the lines are way sharper because there's not just the injury information, but you know who the better teams are, so it's easier to figure out.
Sure.
All right, so you could talk about this. The Packers killed the Bears on Thursday night. It was a shame. It was just a really boring game. Everybody was pumped up. I had a little viewing party, and you know, 10-3. What a dud of a game. I mean, defense is dominated, which is cool, but
yeah,
it was just a bummer to see the Bears go down at home on the big 100th anniversary of the league game.
It was really kind of like another preseason game when it came down to it. Both offenses were anemic. Aaron Rodgers was 18 of 30 for 200 yards, and Trubisky was even worse, 26 of 45 for 228. And on one hand, you could say maybe these two defenses were impressive, but I'm starting to beginning to wonder if it was just the offenses that weren't quite ready to play in week one.
Certainly the Bears offense wasn't ready to play. That was, I mean, putting the ball in Trubisky's hand 45 times in a 10-3 game or 7-3 for most of the time seems like a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Nagy's getting a lot of business here in Chicago about that. Aaron Rodgers going with the new offense with Matt LaFleur. They weren't lighting up either, but the Bears defense, we knew they were going to play well. So we'll see how they fare against Minnesota this week. But yeah, that was definitely a disappointment. As we go on, early Sunday games were pretty exciting besides the Ravens just destroying Miami. We note that the Ravens actually, you know, we actually talked this with Patrick a little bit, and I've heard a lot of it on VSiN that that number couldn't have been higher. You know, should have been higher because basically the books got killed on that Ravens game. Everybody was picking them, and they gave away a lot of money on that game.
Yeah, I didn't hear a final tally, but Patrick told us on Sunday, and I'm sure there was other books across the nation that everyone he talked to just got hammered by the Ravens.
Yeah, I think the line finished up was only like 7.5 or something like that. So it obviously is quickly adjusted this week as we'll look ahead.
The other dud in that early slate was the Minnesota Vikings really opening up a gigantic lead against the Falcons. It was 28-0 at one point. And Atlanta really just kind of tacked on a couple of late scores in the fourth quarter to make it somewhat respectable, 28-12.
Exactly. One of the games we really liked that was exciting when we watched the game at the Link was Washington. And they jumped out to that, 17-0 lead?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And it was super exciting for us. You know, we were like, we were more rooting for the contest. We knew people would pick Philly, and we had stayed away from that spot, got up to like 10 in the contest. And I think it was 11 was the final line, right?
Yep.
The closing line. So we were like 17-0, but the Eagles roared back, and they were actually covering at one point until God bless Case Keenum, and he put them down to a closing score that basically got inside the number and gave the money to the underdogs again.
Yeah, that was another huge decision for the books, and I think they got a lot of that money back that they lost in the Baltimore game with that late Redskins cover, because I'm sure that there was boatloads of cash on the Philadelphia Eagles as well.
That's right. We listed a lot of injuries here, a lot of things that came up in week one. There were some critical injuries to certain players, and it did impact some of the outcomes, but also opens it up for other guys. You've got Tyreek Hill. He's got a collarbone injury. I guess doesn't require surgery, but he's still going to be out a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. I heard Pro Football Doc on a podcast late yesterday talking about how this could be a 5 or 6 or even more week injury, and perhaps even something that could put him on the short-term IR. So something to monitor, without a doubt.
Of course, that opened the door for Sammy Watkins to completely go nuclear in the game. 3 touchdowns and almost 200 yards receiving. I mean, I played against him in fantasy. That was rough. And then Nick Foles did break his collarbone in his game. So that same game, I guess, was Kansas City, and he's on the short-term IR. He'll be out 8 to 10 weeks. Opening the door for Gardner Minshew, with the stash from Washington State. And he did okay when he first came in, but
yeah,
you got to think this team's going to sputter a little bit with Gardner at the helm.
Yeah, I do agree. I mean, he went 22 out of 25, almost 300 yards and 2 touchdowns. So
yeah,
not a terrible performance, although I think that could probably be somewhat attributed to the Chiefs defense, and really just playing soft defense because they had such a gigantic lead at that point in the game.
Yeah, they were beating on him. So one of the ones I noted is guard Chris Lindstrom from Atlanta broke his foot. He's on the IR as well. That's going to hurt Atlanta's chances against the Eagles. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Joe Mixon, the running back from Cincinnati, hurt his ankle. He's questionable for this week's game. For the door for Gio Bernard to have a nice game, and he'll probably head the backfield this week. Another collarbone injury, Devin Funch just broke his collarbone. He's on the IR for the Colts. So that's kind of disappointment for their hopes as well. Eric Weddle got a concussion for the Rams in the safety there. So consider that when you're looking at the Saints-Rams game. And then the Vikings have some injuries in their secondary. Mike Hughes got hurt, and Mackenzie Alexander, they're both listed as questionable this week. So check if they're going to play if you're going to target that game.
Yep.
2 more. Malik Jackson, the tackle from the Eagles, hurt his foot, and he's on the IR. And then Darius Geis, who's the running back from Washington, he's doubtful. Looks like he's going to be out a few weeks, and that's going to open the door for old man AP coming back to run the ball for Washington.
Yeah, tons of injuries in week one, and I think that just goes to show you, like in years past, that the shortened preseason and players playing less and practicing less and tackling less just has an effect on these bodies because they're not ready to go.
It's true. Well, let's go over your net yards per play index here for week one. Obviously, at the top of the list is Baltimore. He's just, you know, 4.5 yards per play net. They just destroyed Miami. I mean, it was quite impressive, obviously, what Lamar Jackson did with the 5 touchdown passes. I mean, every time we looked up, he's throwing a bomb to somebody.
Yeah, they totaled 8.8 offensive yards per play. So that tells you right there how successful they were on every single snap against the putrid Miami team.
Yeah, that was incredible. But we have an interesting one. Number 2 was Buffalo at 2.5. We didn't talk about this. This helped us in the contest.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo was actually losing 16-0, mainly because Josh Allen turned the ball over 4 times in the first half. That was killing us. We were really pissed about that. Almost gave away that game. But then they came back. They rolled it, came back, got the late score, 17-16. We were high-fiving, jumping up and down, not only getting the contest win, I actually bet on that game for the money line.
Yeah, this net really is attributed to their fantastic defense. They were posted the #1 defensive in terms of yards per play effort of the last weekend. They only allowed the Jets 3.4 yards per play. So just a fantastic performance by that side of the ball.
That's awesome. Then you've got, obviously, New England at 1.9. They just annihilated the Steelers. I'm sorry I talked you into the money line of the Steelers, by the way.
That's all right.
And then the Chargers, which, that's interesting. The Chargers are 1.3. I mean, they played well, but I wouldn't say it was dominant. So I wonder, I have to go inside those numbers a little bit.
Yeah, that one really surprised me, too, when I saw it posted up here, as well as the next one, Cincinnati Bengals, also posting a net YPP of 1.3.
Well, the Bengals have impressed us. I thought that they should have probably won that game at Seattle. Seattle had to kind of pull one out of their hat, and then late the Bengals couldn't get a score. They were beating them deep a lot. John Ross for Cincinnati, the third-year wide receiver who has done nothing, literally nothing in 2 years, except break the 40 time at the combine before he even got drafted. Mm-hmm. He lit it up, 148 yards receiving, 2 touchdowns. He couldn't be stopped. So maybe this new Zach Taylor offense is helping the Red Rifle and those receivers.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something worth looking at. Also think, though, on the other side of the ball, that Seattle's secondary is one of the worst in the league. And yeah. One play comes to mind at the end of the first half that really probably killed our contest pick was the play when Andy Dalton heaved it up to John Ross and the safety tried to pull an interception and the ball went straight over his head and John Rice picked it up and walked into the end zone.
Yeah, for like a 60-yard bomb. Like, great. Mm-hmm. It did hurt us in that one. We had the 8.5 and that wasn't going to happen. So on the negative side of it, we know Miami, of course. We talked about the Jets who, again, might have won the game only because of the turnovers. Pittsburgh, we talked a little bit about New England rocking them. I don't know what the hell happened to that team. They didn't come ready to play.
No, they sure didn't. Something's got to be said about that New England defense, though. Super impressive, and all offseason long, I've been hearing about how well-rounded they are, and they're back to their form of the early 2000s. So that New England defense, I think, has really taken a step up, and it's going to be a little bit different of a team for the Patriots going this year.
Hmm. So you've got Indy, obviously, they're the opposite side of the Chargers here at minus 1.3. I think it's what's interesting, maybe it's because Indy ran more plays. I mean, Marlon Mack had almost 200 yards rushing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mack ended up with 174 and a touchdown. So this one is kind of surprising. I do agree.
It's just kind of a math anomaly. Okay, well, let's look at our week two spots, you know, where we're kind of eyeing. You like the Minnesota-Green Bay under.
Yeah, this one is twofold. Minnesota has shown us that they are going to be running the ball a lot this year. I don't know if you saw the stat line from Kirk Cousins this weekend, but yeah. He threw 10 passes.
10 passes, I know. I have Stephon Diggs. Yeah, exactly.
Dalvin Cook had 21 attempts and 111 yards, 2 touchdowns. So with this new offense look for the Vikings, coupled with the poor Green Bay offense that I watched last week, and really the impressive Green Bay defense, I think this number is a little bit inflated at 46, and I like the under a lot in this game. I've already locked it in.
Okay, good. The next, you're promoting a teaser.
Yeah.
Carolina teaser with a Jets teaser. Talk us through that.
Yeah, I think this is the first time that we've ever promoted a teaser on this podcast. Just to rehash a little bit from last year, a teaser is when you put multiple sides or totals together and you can get an additional amount of points on your side of the bet. In this case, I'm putting in a 6-point teaser, which pays about minus 110 at most books. And I'm taking the Carolina Panthers on Thursday night at home down to minus 1. So essentially, they just need to win the game. Mm-hmm. And then I'm pairing them with the New York Jets on Monday night, which is a direct fade of the Cleveland Browns. Both are primetime games, and historically on Thursday nights, the home teams have a very huge advantage on the short week where they don't have much time to prepare for their opponents. The home teams are winning games at a historical clip.
And so just to be clear, the Jets, you're going to get an additional 6 points. So they were getting 2.5 at home, and now they're getting 8.5?
Correct, yeah. So the other big factor that you want to look for when you're picking out sides for teasers is you'd like to get the number between two key numbers, the 7 and the 3 in most cases. So you're looking at favorites that are between 7 and 8 points. And then you're also looking at underdogs that may be on the underdog roll of +2 to +3 points. And if you can push them up through that 7, then you're getting a pretty large advantage, especially with a total that's projected to be fairly low against the Browns on Monday.
Right. Okay. That's right. Get it to a better key number. That's awesome. Another spot you're looking at is Buffalo at the Giants. First half under of 21.5 points. I'm assuming it's because of the defenses, but the Giants defense, are they any good?
Well, the Giants defense is not good, but predominantly it's their secondary, which has given them fits. Dak Prescott lit them up last weekend.
Okay.
But the opponent they're facing this week is not exactly Dak Prescott. They've got Josh Allen coming in at quarterback, and I don't expect there's going to be much scoring in this first half. I think it's going to be ground and pound on both sides of the ball with Saquon Barkley for the Giants and the newly minted Devin Singletary on the Buffalo side. And I think this clock is going to run. I also expect that this first half total is going to dip under that key number. So it's important if you're going on this one that you get that 21 plus the hook.
Right. That'll help you out a lot if you get it early. Okay. Personally, I love the Bills. We'll talk about that in a little bit for the contest. Mm-hmm. But what I want to note is, as much as I want to do it, I actually saw it at 17.5, and then I saw it at 18.5. But the Patriots on the road at Miami, they are basically laying 18.5 to 19 points. That is insane.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the Dolphins stink. They're terrible. Obviously, they're really bad. But traditionally, New England plays pretty bad in Miami, including the loss last year. But I just can't do that many points. Even with a teaser, you can't get down to a good number.
No. Although teasing it down under 14 may not be a bad play.
Right.
I've heard stories already this week about how many players reached out to their agents right after the game and requested to get out of Miami.
Oh, boy.
So this is not going to be good. And breaking news, Wags, here. I'm looking at the screen, and Five Dimes is up to 20.5 on this game.
God.
So
I wonder what the highest line in NFL history has been in a regular season game. I mean, you rarely see double-digit favorites, let alone 20. I mean, that's almost three touchdown favorite. It's
yeah.
Like college line.
And I do expect that if this number reaches 21, you're going to get some interest from the pro bettors out there. But like you said, I'm going to be staying away from this game, and really no reason for us to even think about it as a contest pick, in my opinion.
Exactly. Good transition action. Now let's jump into our Circa contest tete-a-tete segment. There were over 1,800 entries, the final tally for the Circa Million, and which basically increases the payout. They're going to pay more season-end payouts, and then the quarterly payouts are $143,000. So hopefully we'll be able to hit one of those. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Can you run through us again what the quarterly payouts are, just for the listeners who may have missed it?
Sure. The quarterly payouts, basically, they're looking at each month of the contest. And so basically the first four games of the season in September, then the four games in October, then the four games in November, and then the last five games in December will basically be standalone contests, essentially. So mm-hmm. Let's say you came out of the gates and went 0-5 in week one. Okay, you're not going to be doing too well for the season long, probably. You never know. But if you figure it out and get better, and let's say in October you go 4-1 and each week or something, if you're at the top of the standings just for that month, Circa is going to pay that particular entry $143,000. So they're going to do that four times through the year on top of the season-end prizes, which is the $1 million, and then on down through, looks like about 19 places for season long.
Wow, that was really what kind of sets this contest apart. And I know you and I were discussing which one to do, and I think that the quarterly prizes really keeps our interest. Even if we do start out a little bit slow, that way you still have a chance to pick up some prizes if you can pull out one of those quarters later in the year.
That's right. It keeps you in it. So that's way, if you're just getting dogged in the first month, you got something to play for all season. So, Well, our week one picks went 2-2-1. Colts, unfortunately, we had a really interesting situation there. We were watching that Colts-Chargers game. The Colts make the big comeback. T.Y. Hilton makes that amazing play to get in the end zone. And they're down 24-22, I think the score was. And actions at a Colts fan. So, of course, he wants a win, but if they would have missed the extra point, or it went for two and got it, pushing overtime, if they would have missed that extra point, we actually would have won our contest pick.
Yeah.
Because it was within six. But they went to they got the 2 points, went in overtime, and the Chargers scored a touchdown on their first drive, and instead we pushed. It was a disappointment.
Yeah, as soon as Hilton got in the end zone there, I leaned over to you and I said, we actually might want Indianapolis to fail here because we could get a push out of this. And sure enough, Austin Eckler just destroyed the Colts on that last drive of the game and punched it in the end zone again. and we ended up pushing on that one. So that kind of sucked.
Yeah. So out of the 1,800 plus entries, we're right now at 721st, but that's still not bad. Top roughly third-ish, you know, 40%, I guess. There were 16 perfect entries according to the website, and then I counted that there were 30 entries that went 0-5. Ouch. So, hey, what are you going to do? And I think I told you I saw one guy, at least one name that said 1-2-3. All of his entries were 0-5. So we feel a little bit better about that. Would have been better with 3-2, but we'll keep plugging away.
I did read as well that the top five consensus picks, meaning the top five most picked teams, went 2-2-1 as well, because the Colts were in there. I think the Chiefs were on there and the Ravens. Sure. And then there was two losses in there as well. So not so bad. We're right middle of the pack, and hopefully we can do a little bit better this week and ascend the rankings.
That's right. I would guess that a lot of those guys that I'd have to look at their entries, but the win 5-0, probably were able to pick the favorites that won. But a lot of people, if they stuck with the Cowboys, for example, and the Ravens, you know, that would have been easy money. But, you know, it was weird. Like, obviously, like, even last night, you know, the Raiders came through. They obviously won the game outright. And then, you know, Houston, they lost the game, but they kept it close to cover. So, you know, people probably made some money last night, too. Okay, the spots that we're going to talk about this week and just, you know, figure out if we're going to do them or not. You know, I love the Bills. We talked about this already. The Bills are at the Giants. I love that defense. I think the Giants are bad. I had the line at -2 for the Bills, so that's a road favorite. I also saw it down to 1.5, which obviously would be preferable. Mainly, it's just I think the Bills are going to do whatever they want against this team defensively, and then hopefully Josh Allen got his head out of his ass and won't turn the ball over like he did against the Jets to get this win. And that's kind of the way I'm looking at it, but you've got a different angle.
Of course, I agree with you, and both of us decided on Sunday that we're probably going to be on the Bills a lot this year. But the only thing that gives me pause is just this sheer fact that they're going to be road favorites, and this is a team who's not used to being in spots like that, and a quarterback specifically who's not used to being in spots like that. Josh Allen was very disappointing to us in the first half, and I'm hopeful that he can turn it around, but you may be able to convince me. I know the Giants are dead last in defensive DVOA through week one, so I'm hopeful that Josh Allen and this offense can look a little bit better against a much poorer defense than the Jets. And obviously, on the flip side, the Buffalo defense had probably one of the best performances of the weekend, and Eli Manning was laughable in the first half of that game. Saquon Barkley was tough, but I do think that the Bills, it's probably Bills or pass in this game.
Okay. One that I think we do different again is Bears at Broncos. The Bears are also road favorites. I have them at 1.5, although I think it's floated up to 2.5 in some places. There's two angles I'm looking at here. I kind of feel like the Bears have extra preparation time for this game, which helps. It can only help Mitch Trubisky in that awful offense. And the Broncos, you know, it's too bad. I thought they looked really bad last night. The Raiders were the better team, and they did win the game. Flacco, as you mentioned, is a statue, so the Bears can rush him. And that defense didn't look as good as I thought it would for Denver. So, to me, I mean, 2.5 is pushing it. If it gets over 3, then I'm not going to take this. But if it's within field goal, I like the Bears.
Yeah. Again, I have concerns about this one. And, in fact, I initially leaned to the other side. But two major reasons. The first one is the head coach, Vic Fangio. Right. I think that being the former Bears defensive coordinator can only be a positive for the Broncos here, in that he knows exactly how this offense is going to be run. He also is probably more prepared than anyone else to exploit the Bears defense. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not this offense can actually do that is another story. I mean, right. The Bears defensive line is incredible, and preseason broadcasts, we did talk about how the Denver offensive line is going to be poor and a statuesque quarterback. The other main factor for me is just the history of Mile High Stadium in early season games. Year in, year out, teams go in there and they perform poorly because they're not in the best shape that they may be later on in the year. And I've seen Denver cover a lot of games that they probably shouldn't have in September. So those are the two things that give me pause here.
I gotcha. We obviously want to put our best foot forward and agree on our deal, so we'll figure it out. Another one that I put on here was the 49ers at the Bengals. I know that I never think I'd say that before the season, but the Bengals are 1-point favorites at home. So obviously the 49ers are viewed as the better team generally because of that. But I don't know if that's true. I mean, the Bengals played really well at Seattle. They kind of shocked me, actually. That offense looks dynamic. And unlike the Packers with LaFleur, I thought Taylor called a great game plan. Now, Seahawks secondary is not that great, but I'm not sure the Niners secondary is that good either. So if it's a coin flip game, this is obviously very similar to our Tampa Bay one last week.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Bengals here, but we'll see. I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, this one actually opened up as San Francisco -2.5 on the road and has moved 3 points, three and a half points already. So could be one of those stale lines, although there's about 60% of the money on the Bengals right now. So hard to say if that's professionals or public, that, although I can't imagine the public is moving the Bengals.
Yeah, right.
San Francisco actually posted a really good defensive performance last week, but as you and I both know, that's largely due to Jameis giving away free crab legs and touchdowns.
Oh my God, that's a good one. He stole the crab legs, but he was giving them right back to the Niners.
But Cincinnati, you know, they could be worth a look at home. You might be able to convince me to put that one on our card.
Right.
And the other factor is early kickoff here, 1 p.m. East Coast, sure. And San Francisco is flying across the country. Presumably, you know, it may be interesting to look and see what their travel schedule is like, too, if they stayed out east.
Stayed out east. I think they stayed in Ohio. I can't remember where I heard that. They flew directly from Florida up to Ohio. So I believe they stayed out east this year.
All right. I think we can definitely highlight this one and come back to it before the week's over.
All right. Another one involves your squad, the Colts at Titans. Colts, they're getting 3 points on the road. Originally, I jumped all over this. I'm like, the Colts are not favored at home. And then I unfortunately realized that they're at the Titans, and the Titans played really well at the Browns. What are your feelings about this pick?
I probably won't be interested in anything under a field goal,
to
be honest. I'm sure you may agree there. Andrew Luck was phenomenal against the Titans. So if he was playing quarterback, we could be all over it. He never lost a game against them, 11-0.
Right.
But I was looking at the numbers, and I heard this on VSiN, actually. The Colts, as a franchise, have gone 13-2 against the spread in their last 15 games against Tennessee, even before Andrew Luck came on board. So I agree that I think it's going to be Colts or pass in this game, although Devin Funches being out certainly doesn't help the offense at all. And really, Tennessee was impressive last weekend. That was probably the most impressive performance that I saw outside of Kansas City, Baltimore, New England.
Right.
Their defense really destroyed Baker Mayfield, and they ended up the fourth ranked defense after week one. And their offense is ranked eighth with Derrick Henry running all over the Browns last week. So Colts did play well against Tennessee last year, and they really took it to them in that week 17 game. So it could be something we could be interested in, but I don't know. How do you feel about anything under 3?
If it's under 3, it'd probably pass. I was hoping it'd be like 3.5 or something would float up. Because I do think the Colts offensive line obviously destroyed the Chargers. I mean, that Chargers front could not stop Marlon Mack. And, you know, Brissett played well. I mean, he didn't turn the ball over, right? He played solid. And, you know, obviously I was fading the Colts preseason, but I mean, you would see him play. I mean, the Chargers are a quality squad.
Yeah.
They were toe-to-toe right there. They could have won that game. So
And they should have. I mean, you and I spoke afterwards. There was multiple plays that swung that game. The initial drive, the Colts had a roughing the kicker penalty, which gifted the Chargers 4 points. And the Colts actually asked the league to review the play, and they came out today and said that it shouldn't have been a penalty.
Of course.
So another sore.
Yeah. Thanks for the apology letter.
Right. Maybe we can get a full point instead of a half for that one.
All right, well, another one I put down here is the Saints at the Rams. The Saints are 3-point dogs on the road at the Rams. And there's a couple of angles I like here. One, it's given Breeze points. You know, he looked great last night, by the way. His arm looked back. I think that injury narrative from last year was true, and he was throwing the ball all over the place. But obviously, a little bit of a revenge spot, right? I mean, they lost to him in the title game, should have won that game. The other thing is, I don't think the Rams played that great. They won. Gurley looked pretty good. Carolina was kind of up and down on him in the field. And, you know, I would expect the Saints, who I think are a better team than Carolina, to give him hell, at least in L.A. And Jared Goff, obviously, will probably play better, but not sure if it's going to be this week.
Yeah, the Saints looked good last night on offense. The thing that I didn't expect to see was just how poorly they performed on the opposite side of the ball. Deshaun Watson kind of lit them up last night and was running all over them and connecting deep bombs, at least for the portion of the game that I was awake for. And I do think that the revenge factor is something that's going to be built up a lot this week. Probably we're not the first ones to think of that. And I have a feeling that's probably already built into this line, though, a little bit. If you remember last year, I think the Rams were going to the Superdome, and that was a game that you and I went to head-to-head on. And was it L.A. that was favored by one on the road in the Superdome?
I think that sounds right. Mm-hmm. And then the Saints beat them, right? They beat them outright. Mm-hmm. So that's right. I think that was a head-to-head spot for us.
So when you look at this line this year, it really only tells you that the Rams have been upgraded by about a point, or excuse me, downgraded by a point, right, if they're only laying 3 at home this year. So again, probably another one that's going to be largely dependent on what the contest number comes out to be.
Right. Let's go to the couple that you put on here. Minnesota is going to Green Bay. Minnesota's getting 3 points. They looked incredibly impressive against Atlanta. Obviously, we're bludgeoning them for 3 quarters and then kind of let up at the end. As you said, Kirk Cousins only threw the ball 10 times. But in Green Bay, obviously, they're coming home. They get extra prep time. They didn't look good offensively, but they're playing another tough defense in Minnesota. You like those points?
I do. And I think it's largely because of that Minnesota defense. I thought they looked really good against Atlanta on Sunday. They weren't really impressive in the yards per play. They gave up 5.1 to the Falcons, but I think the key was where they stood up and the green zones or red zone, if you will, and kept Atlanta off the board in the first half. And when you go back and think about how poorly the Packers played in week 1, I think that Minnesota could have an edge on that side of the ball.
Yeah, it's just going to be interesting if that run pass mix will continue, but they show their hand. They're going to try to run the ball, but we'll see. The other one you've got is Atlanta. They're actually at home against Philly, but they're getting points. A lot of Philly love out there, of course. I originally saw that too, but the news of Lindstrom getting hurt might be baked in, or that's what I was thinking, that that Philly defensive line could be really tough against the run. But, I mean, Atlanta, they're going to score points at home, right? So should be a really good game.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think is a big positive for the Falcons is the Sunday night football angle, them being at home, opening up the Mercedes-Benz Dome. And I think that the Falcons are going to be looking to get into the win column this week. Matt Ryan did not play well last weekend, and now he's getting back home. You know, there was the huge narrative about all these dome inside games that the Falcons are playing this year. But historically, he's been pretty subpar on the road in general and much better at home. So and that Philadelphia secondary was lit up in the first half by Case Keenum. So I think that the Falcons are going to have some success through the air. And I actually am leaning more and more towards Atlanta as we talk about it.
Okay. I like good strong leans. A couple other games that I just kind of put on here just to think about would be the Jags at Houston, +8.5 right now. You know, the main angle there, obviously, that baking in the Gardner Minshew start. But the defense is really good. And, I mean, they're playing the Chiefs, okay? Houston's good, but they're not the Chiefs, so... And I didn't think the Houston defense was very good last night, to be honest with you. They really didn't get to Breeze. And that's going to be the key to getting to Minshew and obviously stopping Fournette. So any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a decent angle to look at. I believe the look-ahead line was Houston -4. So when you factor in the downgrade from Foles to Minshew, you're talking about 4.5 points. And really the question is going to be, for us to try and value what is that, and was that too big of a move, or do we think it's not enough? I do agree with you that Houston's defense was not excellent last night. They ended up ranking 24th in defensive DVOA after the first week. But I also will say that the Jacksonville defense disappointed me last weekend. granted, they were playing against Kansas City, is probably the best offense in the league, but I had bigger hopes for the Jaguars, and that was not the week one performance that I was hoping to see. So
Miles Jack got kicked out of the game. Did is he suspended for this game? Do you know that?
That is a great question. Something that I haven't seen pop up on any of the news feeds, but certainly something we should look at before we think about this one.
Right.
It's a good question.
Two more spots.
I see a headline here. Miles Jack reportedly won't face a suspension.
Okay, good. So he'll play. He obviously threw a punch or something. Idiot.
Yeah.
Another one, Cardinals plus 13 at Baltimore. I'm not really down with taking these, you know, crummy teams, but it seems like a lot of points. I know that Baltimore is awesome. They play great against Miami, and they're going to continue to play good this year. But 13 points, I mean, whew, it's just hard. Probably a stay-away spot like in the Patriots, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, I know you and I were talking about this in the link on Sunday, and I think I told you I snapped up 14.5 with the Cardinals on Sunday afternoon as Kyler Murray was making that comeback against the Lions.
Right.
But I'm not sure if I can take anything under 2 touchdowns here, and I do expect that the contest line is going to be pretty sharp, probably right in that 13 to 13.5 range.
Sure.
And to me, at that number, under 2 touchdowns, it would probably be Baltimore pass.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Kyler and Cliff Kingsbury had a nice comeback in that second half, but I wonder if that was more attributable to the poor Lions coaching.
Right.
Yeah, here in Detroit, all I can hear this weekend or this week in Detroit is how Matt Patricia is under fire already.
As he should be. They blew it. But all right, the last game I was intrigued by was the Seattle going to Pittsburgh. Seattle's getting 3.5 points, which makes sense. I mean, they're the road team. Pittsburgh looked terrible. So is this a classic Mike Tomlin, give him the 300 speech, you know, get them all fired up and actually play football? I don't know, but Seattle wasn't great, but obviously they came through late to beat the Bengals. And, you know, their offense was actually pretty solid. I like their offense. Their defense was getting lit up. So I think that's a good overplay, by the way, for the game. But any thoughts on the contest about Seattle plus 3.5?
Well, initially, my reaction is it's going to be underdog or pass here. I don't think that we're going to be looking to lay 3.5 or 4 with Pittsburgh. If the Steelers can't throw the ball against Seattle's secondary, I don't know. This will be a huge measuring stick game for them. One point I will make, though, is I did hear that Juju Smith-Schuster limped off late in the fourth quarter on Sunday night.
It's a toe injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's going to be something to monitor. But Seattle's defense was so dreadful, and I'm not sure that they'll be able to withstand the Steelers, but there's a big key number if we can get 4, especially.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, those are our contest discussion. We obviously didn't have any surefire picks this week. We're going to have to tighten it up off air and figure out what we're going to do, but you know, that's kind of the beauty of this contest. Once we get the lines, we can definitely dig in a little bit deeper, and those will come out Thursday around, I guess it was, what, noon Central time or noon Eastern time, right?
The lines are posted 10 Pacific, so 10 Pacific, it will be noon Eastern, correct. Yeah. Sorry, noon Central.
Central, right. So,
and
we'll relay the picks to our proxy, Dave Ward in Las Vegas, to use the app.
Yeah, major props to Dave. I know we didn't say that enough on this podcast, but awesome dude. I was really thankful to meet him this weekend and really think we have a good proxy, and hopefully he can bring us some luck going forward in the contest.
Absolutely. All right, well, that wraps up this episode. We've covered a lot. Again, another long episode, but get our sea legs and maybe cut this down a little bit. We're just talking a lot about the excitement of the Vegas trip and everything. So thank everybody for listening, and hopefully you'll be able to get out there to Vegas and check out these books we talked about. And hopefully in the future episodes, we'll have Patrick on to help give us some insight.
Yeah, that'd be great. We can get Patrick on and let us know what's going on out around the books and see if he can provide some insight.
Absolutely. All right. Well, follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. Follow me at Wegspool on Twitter and Instagram.
And you can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
All right. Well, good luck this week.
That's a wrap for this episode of the Side Action Podcast. We appreciate all of your listens and thank you for joining us. We'll see you all again next week on Thursday for some more hot picks and side action. We'll be right back.
Side Action Podcast, its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of this podcast, and opinions between talk show hosts may conflict. Individuals following the advice given on the podcast accept their own risk of losses from wagers made, as the Side Action Podcast, its owners, hosts, associates, or guests will not guarantee any advice given. The opinions and advice given on the Side Action Podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Intro and outro and transition music credits. Song titles, Jerry 5 and District 4 by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.org. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org/licenses/by 3.0.